Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a Pink Panther, and I love film. As Frank Herbert once said, there is no real ending. It's just the place where you stop the story. Hence why the title of the film, Never Ending Story, is justified despite its running time. Fair play, Frank. Yes, smart. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Himesh Patel, Sharon Stone, and even Seth Sandford. But this week, it's the brilliant actor, writer, podcaster, and producer, star of Always Sunny in Philadelphia and the excellent film Blackberry, it's Mr. Glenn Howerton. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 25 minutes of chat with Glenn. You get a secret from him. We discuss beginnings and endings. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Glenn Howerton is an excellent actor and writer amongst many other things. You'll know him from Always Sunny in Philadelphia and AP Bio. But if you haven't seen his film Blackberry, I highly recommend it. It's an excellent film. He gives a totally surprising and brilliant performance in it. I really loved it. You should check it out. We recorded this on Zoom a few months ago. We'd never met before, but what a fucking great time we had. I really think you're going to love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 268 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a writer, a creator, an actor, a podcaster, a live performer, an improviser, a teacher, a doctor, a businessman, a cranker, and an even more voltage cranker. He's here. He's alive. I can't believe he's in front of me. Can you? Well, he is. Let's welcome him to the show. It's the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend. It's Glenn Howerton.
How you doing, man?
How are you? Thank you for doing this. How's it going?
It's going great. I have a question. Is this on video? Are we videoing this or is this just audio? I've only listened to the podcast.
There is a video that goes black and white to the Patreons like it's a film noir.
Okay.
If you're comfortable with that, or we get rid of the video. But you look fucking great.
Thanks, man. So do you.
You look great.
I got a fresh summer cut, you know?
Fresh out the salon. Tell me, there's so many things I want to ask you about. Let's start at the present day. I saw your film Blackberry. It's fucking excellent. It is one of the films of the year by a long shot. It's excellent.
Thank you. You're excellent
in it. And what I really like about it, it's a proper, like, I wonder, my guess would be that you are in that position of being a very, very funny comic actor who sometimes wants to be like, hey, look, I'm actually a really good dramatic actor. And then you do Blackberry and it is like a second into it, you're like, holy shit, this guy's a really good dramatic actor. You're so like from the top, it doesn't take adjustment. That's what's interesting about it. Knowing that I know you from so many other things, you bang in straight from the top. It's a great film and you're great in it.
Well, I appreciate that. The weird thing is I always wanted to be a dramatic actor. That was what I strove to be my whole young acting life. But I just kept getting pulled into comedy. And it's not that I didn't enjoy comedy. I did enjoy it. I liked it. I loved it, actually. But it was never my ambition to become a comic actor. And then, you know, next thing I know, it's like all I'm doing. And
But funny is funny. Some people are funny and you can't help it. And there's a lot of people who aren't funny. And there's a lot of dramatic people who would love to do the opposite way. And I mean, you've got the gift.
Well, thank you. It's fun. I mean, I'm touched. It's very, comedy's just really, it's undeniably fun to work on comedy. It's undeniably fun to come to work every day. And the object is to make people laugh as opposed to make them feel things, which is great, but not as much fun as making people laugh. So I think in some ways I was always destined to do it. I just was in denial for a long time. And now I want to see what it's like to make people cry.
You can do it, son. You can do it. So thanks, tell man. Me, when you were making... But on Blackberry, you've also got, to be fair, it's a cast of comic actors, actually, isn't it? Sort of, by definition, who were all very, very, very good. Was it funny on set? Were you having a right old time between takes? Or was it a bit more serious?
I think because the tone of the movie is not overtly comic, even though it is funny.
Yeah.
Everyone is doing their best to turn in a dramatic performance, and ideally, what's funny about it is just sort of the circumstances, the ridiculousness of the situations, the absurdity of how extreme their decisions are, and et cetera. The laughing is almost more of a release valve. So it wasn't the same as being on the set of a true comedy.
Yeah.
But we were having fun, for sure.
And then at the other end of the scale, and the other end of your career, you started Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and 45 years later, you're still making it. And it is now like The Simpsons, right? Is it longer than The Simpsons?
No.
How long is it? 19? 18 seasons.
Well, we've been on the air for 18 years. The show is...
So cool.
Yeah, the 16th season is airing right now. And we have been working on the show in some form or another for almost 20 years, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my question on that, right? I would also guess, this is all speculation, that there was probably a point year five where you thought, well, this is going to come to an end and we're going to have to... There must have been a point where you thought it will end. Then you made a decision for it not to end. I imagine that's gone up and down. And then it's like, oh, do we get to do this forever? And you've changed and you've grown and you're all this, but it's still fucking funny and they're all your friends. Why wouldn't you do this forever? Tell me your version of my speculation, please.
That's right. No, your speculation is almost exactly right. I'd say about, it was about year six, the season six, I should say, that I started to get a little antsy to move on. Mm. I started to feel like it was preventing me from pursuing other ambitions that I had as a performer. And then I kind of came out of that funk for season seven and really hit it hard in season seven, was very excited about it. And that was the last season that we were contracted to do at that point. And so when we wrapped season seven, we didn't know if we were going to get picked up again. And I was sort of okay with it being over. I was really sad. I remember thinking like, oh man, that's really sad if that was the last time I get to play that character and last time I get to do those scenes with these guys. And then they picked us up for like three more seasons. And that was both incredible and also terrifying at the same time. Yeah. Just the thought of having to do three more at that point was just, you know. And then, I kind of hit a wall again around season 12. And I tried to dip on the show. And I did dip as a writer and as a producer. And then they kept pulling me back in as an actor. And then finally, season 15, I gave in and just came back full time. I was like, I guess this is just who I am.
This is my life. Yeah.
Yeah, this is who I am. But you're also right. Like it's very seductive because it's a really fun show to work on, and we can go to so many crazy places that I think a lot of shows can't go to, and I get to work with my friends. So it's an extraordinary privilege that I try not to take for granted. And I don't take it for granted, but there have been definitely times where I felt like, you know, there it was a golden handcuffs kind of situation.
Do you think between you, that sort of ebb and flow of that feeling, do you take turns with that feeling? Do you know what I mean? Have you been telling the other one, no, hey, come on, this is the best time of our lives? Or is it only been you who's had that feeling?
It's only been me. But I don't know why. I don't understand why. Those guys are both so busy with other things. I'm kind of surprised. Yeah. I think they were just able to have a little bit better, more perspective on it maybe than me, or at least a different perspective, which is, hey, this is so fun. This is the dream. We should figure out a way, rather than ending the show, we should figure out a way to be able to do both, pursue our other interests and still continue doing the show.
I guess I say this like, in terms of like, legacy and stuff, it's amazing that the show is as good as it always has been, frankly. And it's like 18 years. But like, was there a tipping point between like, oh God, what if we can't keep this level up, to, no, we've got this. We've got this. This can run forever. Do you know what I mean? In the same way, I think with The Simpsons, like at some point they must have, if it's this thing, if we have to make this perfect 2-season thing, or you know what I mean? Like, and it becomes, no, it can just keep going because it's really good. Like, do you ever lose faith in that side of it? Quality, I guess.
It definitely becomes more and more difficult each season to come up with new and interesting things.
Mm.
You know, but that's just by virtue of the fact that for as loose as the premise is, it gives us a lot of freedom. But at the same time, the characters have been established to have certain characteristics, and you can't change those characteristics. So the challenge is less, and you're a writer, so maybe you can relate to this too, but it's, the world is constantly providing great stories or things to satirize, you know, ideas. So it's not difficult coming up with ideas for stories. What is difficult is coming up with a point of view that you haven't seen the character express in a comedic way yet, or a variation of what you've seen, because you can't change, again, you can't change the character entirely, but you also don't want to see the same reactions from the characters over and over again, because it gets old and it feels like you're just kind of leaning on catchphrases and old jokes that you've established, you know. And to some degree, I think that's unavoidable, because again, you've established certain characteristics that the characters have, but you don't want to lean on that too much. So you have to come up with new dimensions to a character that you've been exploring for 20 years, and that's difficult.
Yeah. And you also have, you can't, particularly with your character, they can't change too much. It is, I do think it's incredible. Any sitcom that runs for years and years, that but it isn't the game, like, for example, in this scene, the character is definitely going to be outraged by what has just happened. So it's like, there's a million different ways of expressing outrage. And that's the game in this. Like, we know his reaction is going to be in this area. So how do we do an original way of that?
Yeah, right. And how do you do that where, because one of my favorite things about really any entertainment, but especially in comedy, is I want to be a little shocked. I mean, you know, initially I think there was a lot of talk, and always has been a lot of talk regarding our show about like us pushing boundaries, or, you know, the shock value of the show. And it was never our intention to push boundaries for the sake of pushing boundaries. But I do think that you have to kind of shock people a little bit. Otherwise, I don't know, you can't keep people engaged in the way that I like for entertainment to be engaging. Yeah. I want to be sitting forward in my seat, not sitting back. And I need a little bit of like, whoa, that's, oh, wow, I can't believe they did that, or I was not expecting that, or normally, you know. So I think that's the, but that's also the fun in it too, is when you find those variations, being able to present them in a way that feels like, I don't know, surprising, or not what the audience expected, even for the long-term fan of the show who's seen every episode.
Amazing. And now you do this podcast so you can hang out even more, which I also love. I mean, it just seems like you really all like it. I mean, you really like spending time together, and I do think that's like a secret to most TV shows. I think the secret is, if it's a group of people that genuinely like each other, that's, you want to hang out with them. That's the deal, right? You guys,
I think that's absolutely right. I think there's no, you can't totally fake chemistry, right? There needs to be some chemistry, some real chemistry there. And we do, I think it's that's an interesting dichotomy, is that our characters are so awful to each other, but we as people love each other and support each other. Yeah. And I think that comes through regardless of the awfulness of the characters. And I do think that's kind of the secret sauce of it.
Do you, can I ask you this question? Maybe it's too personal and we can cut it if it is. Given that you kind of, you're an ensemble show that started before any of you were famous, I imagine now you're all older and wiser and settled. Was there a period where you might be jealous of each other doing other things, or, you know, someone going off to a film. How were all your egos managing your success, I suppose, over the years?
Yeah, that's a very fair question. Because I do think that that's something that can cause a lot of problems with TV shows, right? If you have a breakout character, you have a breakout actor from a show who, you know, suddenly is getting all these incredible opportunities because of the show that you're also on, and you don't get those same opportunities, it can lead to a lot of like jealousy and weird feelings, and sort of like all of a sudden you're not on equal footing and all this kind of stuff, and it's a little goofy. And, you know, I would say for sure initially, you know, Charlie, because he's so incredibly talented and so incredibly funny, he broke out, as was expected. Even when I watched the show, I'm like, that's the guy that I would want to see immediately do other things as well. For some reason, Rob and I both, well, all of us really, even Caitlin, and, you know, Danny's already a massive movie star, so what does he care? But we're just not, I've never been that the type of person to resent somebody else's success or to feel jealous of somebody else's. I mean, I've had twinges of it, certainly. I'm not impervious to it, but I guess for me, you know, look, I love Charlie so much as a human being, as a person, as a friend, and he's always been so incredibly supportive of me, and I think he's genuinely made me a better performer and actor overall. He's added so much to my life. I have so much gratitude for him as a human being, that when I started seeing him break out, because we really came up together on this show, instead of being jealous, I was really like really proud of him. And I was really, really happy to see him succeed in that way. I mean, no, genuinely. I mean, I know it's like,
No, I love this answer.
It's true. I mean, it really is, you know, and he stayed, but he also continued to stay loyal to the show even after he started starring in movies. He didn't go, oh, now I'm going to go off and be a movie star and, you know, screw you guys and kind of leave us behind. He recognized that it was still a great creative outlet for him. And so maybe I would have been a little bit more upset if he had left the show or something. But, and then, you know, with Rob now going off and owning a soccer team and, you know, becoming best friends with Ryan Reynolds, who's a massive movie star. You know, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, I see his talent and his brains and his intelligence. And I'm like, it's almost more like, I wonder what took him so long, you know? So yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, some of it is just, I inherently don't really have that thing that makes me feel that way. Yeah. But also it's the nature of who we are as people. We never take each other for granted.
Fucking hell, you're going to make me cry and we're fucking 17 minutes in. You piece of shit.
Who knew you were such a softy, Brett?
I know. Don't tell anyone. Right, look, here's the deal. I've forgotten to tell you something and I should have said it up top.
Oh, no.
And now I've heard all this, I feel terrible about this, but...
What?
I'll just say it. You've died. You're dead. Dead. You're dead.
Actually dead? Like I actually died?
You're dead. Yeah, you did. How did you die?
Oh my God, I did.
Yeah, what happened? Yeah. Do you remember?
Wait a minute. Yeah. Wow. It's weird that I didn't know that going into this, because I guess I always thought that if you were dead, you knew that you were dead, but now I'm realizing
it's my job to have told you and I forgot, to be fair. So I don't want you beating yourself up about this. I should have said earlier.
Okay, so you were actually charged with letting me know that I died?
Yeah, I think sort of self, you know, you make your own business, you know what I mean? Like, and I wouldn't say I was hired, I sort of took the job.
I understand. So now that you've brought it up and now that it's all coming back to me, which is, I guess, what happens when you die and somebody tells you that you die suddenly, now you remember all the ways. So, So, okay, here, this is a little crazy. All right. This is going to sound kind of insane, but okay, here's what happened. So in an effort to fulfill what was, I would say, a lifelong childhood dream of mine of becoming Spider-Man.
Right.
What I did was I purposely got myself bitten by a radioactive spider. And it was, first of all, that was difficult to find a radioactive spider, and it was difficult to break into the facility and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I won't go into that part of the story, but suffice it to say, I was able to pull off getting bit by a radioactive spider. And at first it was going great.
Right.
You know, I was almost instantly strong and fit next thing I knew, I could climb walls and, you know, stuff like that. Wow. And I even had the spidey senses. I could sense things sort of before they were about to happen. And I was also really, really fast. My speed just shot up.
Because it's extraordinary.
Yeah, no, it was. And it all kind of happened incrementally over the course of, like, I would say 3 or 4 days, just, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Suddenly I would notice these new things.
Did your family know? Were you keeping it quiet?
I wanted to keep it quiet because I wanted to have the option of it just being fully like a secret identity type situation. Mm-hmm. I wanted the option on the table.
Yeah.
I figured at a certain point I would probably have to tell my wife, just because you can't really, I think she would start to notice things.
If you were on the ceiling when you went to bed and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or she'd catch me, you know, practicing climbing up the side of the house or something like that, you know. Mm. The weird thing is, like, I couldn't figure out how to get webs to shoot out of my wrists for whatever reason. That part of it wasn't working. And that's one of the most fun parts, right? Is shooting the webs out of your wrist and then, you know, attaching it to buildings and like being able to swing around. And, you know, so that was kind of a bummer, but I kept kind of working on it. And then one day I was, I mean, this is kind of gross, but I was taking a shit and I shit a spider web. And found out. Yeah.
That's where they come from.
Yeah. And I was like, well, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense. Like you can't expect to get bit by a radioactive spider and have your powers like be exactly like what you've seen in movies, because that's a movie and this is real.
And there's no hole in your wrist. So it makes sense. What are the webs coming out of?
Exactly. Yeah. And I realized that in retrospect. I was like, well, yeah, of course that actually makes more sense. Okay. I can work with that. Right. So I'll just figure out a way to work with that, right? Because training in martial arts and training to, you know, figure out how to get it to come out of my butt and still be able to swing by it. Like, I figured that was all workable, right? I could figure that out.
I just figure you've got to go butt first everywhere. That's the issue I see, is like you're aiming for like tops of buildings. You're going to have to be butt up. Right.
Well, in my mind, I thought like, well, no, it'll come out of my butt, but then I'll swing it around and it'll be like sort of a thong situation. But again,
okay.
So it'll be almost more like I'm sitting on the spider web, because if I'm upright, you know what I'm saying? And it's like coming this way, but then I could still kind of grab onto it. I don't know. I hadn't.
Like a sort of roller coaster seat, like one of those hanging.
Yeah. Yeah. Not unlike that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So I thought this is workable. I'll figure this out eventually. But truth be told, that was actually the first sign. That was really when things started to take a little bit of a turn.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So here's what I learned. The truth is, like, when you get bit by a radioactive spider, and this is true, you do get the Spider-Man powers at first. But the metamorphosis doesn't stop there. You know what I'm saying? Unfortunately. Yeah. So soon after that, I started growing a lot of hairs everywhere and it was pretty gross. And I was like trying to wax it and stuff like that, but it was just coming back so fast. And then there was no hiding it anymore because legs started protruding from my body. Eyes started appearing on my back.
Wow.
It was pretty gnarly.
What did your wife say?
Well, she said, maybe there's something we can do. And I said, I don't know. I don't think there's an antidote for this, but we, you know, she was doing a lot of internet research and couldn't find any, you know, stories of people who had done what I had done in real life. Everything was coming from my comic books. And she was like, well, this is all comic book logic. It doesn't, you know, this is not.
Yeah. What do you do when eyeballs appear on your husband's back? She's Googling and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that was the point at which, and by the way, I still had all the Spider-Man powers. So that was awesome. But at that point, like I was becoming quite gruesome to look at. So it was like not as much fun, because you want to be, you know, sexy and ripped and have Spider-Man powers. But, you know, I had to learn the hard way that's just not how it worked. And I suddenly had an insatiable craving for meat. I grew fangs and I'm not proud of this, but I started eating folks.
Oh, shit. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not good. Not good. And I knew, and then the thing is,
not
like,
ideal.
You know, not ideal. And I knew it wasn't good, right? I knew it was a bad thing to do, but the spider stuff was really kind of taking over and I had a difficult time fighting it. And I don't want to make excuses, but you can't really know what that feels like until you've actually gone through it.
That's fair. That's fair. I can empathize. I can imagine, but I can never really know.
Yeah, exactly. But I did, you know, because I still had a conscience, I did turn myself in to the police.
Oh, wow. Were they terrified?
Well, they shot me on sight.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. Yeah, which is kind of understandable. I mean, if picture what I was becoming walking into a police station and put yourself in their position. I totally get it. I think anyone would have shot me had they had guns. And they really let me have it. I mean, they emptied their clips. And it was
fuck, man.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah, it was gruesome. But luckily, you know, when I appeared in the afterlife, I was back to my...
You're back to yourself.
Corporeal form as a human. And I think honestly, Christ. I think it should be a lesson out there for everybody, especially kids like, you know, who think that they want to be Spider-Man. You don't.
Well, I think the lesson is more sort of be careful turning yourself into the police.
Oh, yeah, maybe you're right. Right. I could have, right. Maybe that was the mistake.
I think that's the takeaway. The, you know, the spider part possibly had solutions. But you sort of idealistically went to the police hoping for sort of justice.
I guess I just really felt bad about like eating so many people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, look, it's not the first time that's come up on this podcast.
Is that right?
Many people have died that way. And it's we're very understanding here. We're very welcoming to people like yourself. And so welcome. And don't worry, you're forgiven. And it was kind that you and yourself. And I just wish you hadn't gone to the police, but we're happy to have you here. I guess my next question would be, do you worry about death? Was it something you used to worry about pre-spider, radioactive spider?
No, it's not something I really concern myself with on a daily basis. There have been a handful of times where it creeps in, you know, but I don't really think about it that much. How about you? Do you think about death?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, okay. I think about it as like a motivating force for me to get on with shit because I'll be dead soon. Sort of my answer for everything I do is, well, I'll be dead soon, so I should do this.
Yeah, get busy living get busy dying, right?
Yeah. Do you think there's an afterlife for you or everyone?
I don't know, man. I had this weird thing. It was like, I really don't know. And I mean, I guess like a true agnostic, I don't know. But I also don't feel like I need to know. Mm-hmm. I think it just kind of is what it is. If I had to say I believed something, it would be that I believe that God, if there is a God, that he has a sense of humor, and that if he really is all knowing and all powerful and created everything and created us, I think he created us exactly the way he wanted us to be. And so I don't think he's got a problem with what we're doing down here. So, you know, I guess I just kind of trust that if there is that entity, that I'll be okay. And if there isn't, then it's just all darkness and nothing.
Well, let me tell you, there is a heaven and you are welcome in it. I tell you, for many reasons. One, everyone's a big fan of your work. Also, it's the best death we've ever had. So you are really welcome in heaven. Everyone's like, it's him, it's him. People, it's legendary, your death.
Cool.
Evan, it's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
Well, I mean, I love watching movies.
Oh, okay. Then you'll fit right in. It's filled with movies, screening rooms everywhere, perfect cinemas, as far as the eye can see.
Everyone wants
to talk about your life, but they want to talk about it through films. And the first thing that they ask you, Glenn Howerton, is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Glenn Howerton?
This might not have been the first thing that I ever saw, but it's the first thing I remember seeing, which really, I guess, is the question. It was right before The Return of the Jedi was coming out, and I was actually living in England at the time. A little town called Felixstowe. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
And I think I've done a gig there.
Have you?
I believe I have, yeah.
Yeah. I was living there, and I was probably 6 or 7 years old, and it was right before Return of the Jedi came out. So they did a double feature of Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back at a local movie theater. And it feels like the first thing I ever saw was back-to-back Star Wars movies, which feels like a big commitment. But you know, when you're 6 years old and you've never seen anything like that, I mean, I was absolutely riveted.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Do you have siblings? Who were you with when you watched this?
I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure I was, I don't remember who I was with. Isn't that sad? Yeah.
Maybe you were on your own.
But I do know that I almost immediately afterwards joined the Star Wars fan club. Yeah.
What do you get as what did you get as a fan?
I remember I got a patch that you could put on your that I could put on my jacket. It just said Star Wars. That's and I'm sure I got other stuff too, but that's the only thing I remember getting.
Do you remember thinking any part of you as in thinking, oh, I wanna be in this, I wanna be part of this, or were you just like, fucking hell, spaceships?
I think it was the latter. I don't think at that point, at that point, there was nowhere in my brain that thought that being an actor was a real thing or that it was even something that I wanted to do. Yeah.
Right. What about being scared? What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like it? Do you like being scared?
No, I don't. I don't. I like scary movies and mm-hmm. I like things that are very chilling, but I don't like the feeling. I think it takes a lot to scare me these days. I feel like I've seen it all, but I don't like it when something actually effectively troubles me and scares me. And I will say that I kind of have two things for this. One was the Blair Witch Project, which genuinely disturbed me when I saw it. And then a couple years later, watching The Ring. Something about the idea of harmlessly playing a videotape, getting a phone call, and knowing that you have 7 days before some unknown entity is going to kill you, really messed me up. I was like well into my 20s at that point, but it's still just like, it really got to me, that movie.
It's a fucking great idea. It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And it stopped me. I stopped watching horror movies for a solid 12-13 years after that. Like, it messed me up so bad. I was like, I don't want to watch horror movies. I don't want to feel that way anymore. So I just stopped.
Wow. Yeah. Do you remember what was your return 12-13 years later, the horror movie that you watched?
Oh, that's a good question.
What got you back?
I don't remember. I don't remember what got me back. I like it when horror movies are fun. When they're genuinely disturbing and scary, that's tough. There's instances where movies have been genuinely scary, but they're just such great films that it makes up for it in a way. Like The Exorcist, which I consider to be just a brilliant film outside of the fact that it's a horror film. It's just, I just love it. And, Hereditary was just an incredible film, but really, really disturbing and scared the shit out of me. It's awful.
It's awful. What about crying? What's the film that made you cry the most? And do you cry? Are you a crier?
I am. I'm actually a total softie. That doesn't take that much to make me cry. And yet, I have a really hard time thinking of movies that made me cry the most. I do have this very specific memory, though, of being in, I don't know, it was like 5th or 6th grade. And it was the first time I'd ever been on like a date. And it's been by date, I mean, there was a girl that I liked and we went to the movies together. And I think we went with some other friends and our parents dropped us off at the movies and we went and saw the movie.
Please forgive me. What's 5th and 6th grade? How old are you in that?
Yeah. I would have been 11 or 12. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And we went and saw the movie Beaches in theaters.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
And I remember, this one stands out to me just because I could not, that movie was so sad and I could not stop myself from crying. It was one of those situations where I would have normally wanted to stop myself from crying because I was with a girl and I think some of my buddies were there and I was just like, don't stop crying. I couldn't stop crying because it was just so sad. It really got me, that movie. Yeah.
I mean, that's a nightmare. You can't take a date to Beaches. That is a film you watch on your own in the basement.
Yeah.
You get it all out and then you return to the world.
I know. As I recall, I think she was crying too. So I think I sort of made it through that. I don't remember what the end result was of that happening to me, but.
Did you kiss on this date after all the crying?
No, I wasn't ready for that yet. I was a late bloomer. I wasn't ready for all that stuff yet. No. It's sad, isn't it sad though, that I think so many of us as men, as little boys, were told not to cry and that it was embarrassing to cry.
Yeah.
I think we got to get rid of that shit. I think we got to be able to cry men.
I think we do. And I also was like, I always think I wonder where it came from because it didn't come from my dad. You know what I mean? I think about that. I go, my dad wasn't telling me, don't cry, you big baby. But it must have been the culture, the world. I don't know. I thought You Mustn't Cry.
Yeah, I think it was something, it was more, yeah, because my dad, it was the same way. He wasn't telling me not to cry, and nobody in my family was. But it was one of those things where I think you cry enough times at school and some kid makes fun of you for crying at school.
Right.
You know, I think that's where I got the message. It was from other kids who had gotten the message from their parents that you're not supposed to cry. And then they passed it on by, you know, making fun of you for crying. I think that's what happened to me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
With your kids, are you like, cry, cry?
We certainly don't discourage it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're at an age now where, you know, I don't think they're quite at that place where they're trying to stop themselves from crying. Maybe my oldest is, my 11-year-old. Yeah. He's a little more self-conscious. But yeah, no, they're pretty good about expressing their feelings. And we definitely try to be the kind of parents that allow space for that kind of thing. Yeah, it's challenging. It's challenging.
I bet. Tell me this. What is the film that you love? Critics don't like it. Most people don't like it, but you love it unconditionally.
This, you know, I'm sure that there is a better answer to this, but it was the only thing I could think of, which is The Exorcist 3.
That's a great answer.
Have you seen that movie?
Answer. That's the one in the insane asylum.
Yes, yes. It's got George C. Scott and Brad Dourif, or Brad Dourif. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but as I recall, yeah, it got sort of pretty ignored, and I wouldn't say it was like panned by critics, but it was just kind of like seen as like it's not as good as the original, right? And just kind of brushed off. And I know that The Exorcist 2 was widely considered to be a pretty terrible movie. I actually never saw it.
Yeah.
But because The Exorcist 3 was actually written and directed by William Peter Blatty, who wrote the original novel, and it was the true sequel to The Exorcist, I was interested in seeing it as a kid. And I remember that movie scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And it's a really, I think it's a beautifully shot film and the performances are phenomenal. Brad Dourif is like incredible.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's always good. He's a really good actor. Yeah.
I never understood why.
That's a great
show. Yeah. That movie really stands out to me as being one of those movies that I never understood why it didn't get more attention. But for the people who have seen it, everybody remembers some of the scariest moments from that movie. And I don't know if you remember some of those moments, but there's a moment
like one of the great jump scares in it, right?
Yeah, one of the best, if not the best I've ever seen. Do we want to give this away or do we want people to just watch the movie? But I'll put it this way, I'll set it up. There's a scene and it's in the middle of the night and it's just a camera is not moving. It's just set. We're just looking down a hospital hallway and it stays like that for a very, very long time. And that it just, yeah, I almost don't want to give it away just because, you know, for people who haven't seen it, just that it's a great movie and I recommend that people see that movie and it does. And it totally holds up.
Excellent. Excellent answer. What about a film that you saw that you loved? You used to love it, but you've watched it recently and you've gone, I don't like this anymore.
Well, to be fair, I saw it again recently. I saw this movie again recently, but I knew going in, I was like, I know this is not going to be a good movie. I know it isn't because even my memories of it as a kid, I was like, even though I'm remembering it fondly and remembering how much I loved this movie, I was like, I just know that this movie is going to be really bad, but it was Supergirl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Which I think came out in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it since I was little and I can imagine there's probably some issues with it.
Yeah. It's it's real bad on almost every level.
No.
But very cool that in the most recent movie, The Flash, they go into this kind of multiverse type thing where he encounters different versions of different superheroes and they used a lot of the superheroes that you've seen throughout the year, the actors that you've seen throughout the years and aged them down. So you actually see Helen Slater as Supergirl in The Flash, which I was like, that's awesome.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So Supergirl, it has a special place in my heart because it was the very first VHS tape that we ever owned as kids. I remember we finally bought a VHS when we were living in Korea. We bought our first VHS. I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And my dad said, you can pick out one movie and you can buy it. And my sister and I had both seen Supergirl in theaters, and I guess we loved it.
Yeah.
And we saw that videotape. And as I recall, it probably wasn't this much, but in my, it was so expensive. It was like $60.
Yeah, I can believe that.
For a VHS tape in the 80s, it probably wasn't. It was probably $20, but I seem to remember it being like $60.
Yeah.
Which is so expensive for a VHS tape, especially for that time. And yet, my dad was nice and he bought it for us.
I don't know anything about your childhood. Why were you in so many different countries, may I ask?
Dad was an Air Force pilot. So we moved around quite a bit.
Amazing.
As kids. Yeah.
Amazing. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is good, but the experience you had around seeing it always makes it special to you, Glenn Howerton.
Well, it's got to be Jackass 2. And that's because it was the... I don't know why I thought this was a good idea. Well, no, I sort of do. But like, it was the first... I took my now wife to see that movie on our very first date ever. Right. I'd met her at a party that I had had at my house. Rob and I were living together in Venice, and she was at the house, and I met her, and I could tell she had a really wicked sense of humor. And I just thought, like, that's a more fun date movie than something romantic. I want to go see something and laugh. Yeah. So we went and got sushi, and then we went to Jackass 2. And I remember the amount, the degree to which she was laughing. I just remember thinking, this girl is awesome. That she thinks this movie is funny. Yeah, because that movie is it's messed up. All those Jackass movies are. And she just thought it was hilarious, and so did I. And so it was a real bonding moment for us, and I'll just never forget that first date.
Man, that's you're very lovely answers. It's really it's a problem. What is the film that you most relate to?
I can't think of anything in that department, if I'm honest. Maybe it's because I think I felt like as an Air Force brat, as somebody who moved around so much, I have a pretty tenuous grasp on who it is that I am even now to this day.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it just was changing so much as I was growing up, as I moved from different culture to different culture, that it kind of messed with my identity. So I don't really even know who I am now. So even if I saw myself on screen, I don't know that I would recognize it.
Were you like a chameleon? Would you change to whatever school you were at, the type of vibe? Would you just become what you thought was the right thing there?
I think so. Yeah, I think it was important to me to fit in and not be the new kid as quickly as possible. But I do think that's also where I developed a sense of humor. I think that was a way of getting people to like me, was by making them laugh. So I'd say that making people laugh was always a common thread throughout all of that.
And acting.
Yeah. Being an actor, having to become, or feeling like I was feeling the pressure to become something or someone else when you move from South Korea, from an Air Force base in South Korea to Montgomery, Alabama, to a regular school where not filled with a bunch of other Army brats and Air Force brats, where everybody had been going to school together since they were in preschool and everybody already knew each other. That was very much like major culture shock, where I thought, I gotta figure out what it is that people like in this town.
Yeah.
And try to become that.
What was the longest you were in one place of your childhood?
While my dad was still active military, England. We were there for about 4 years in Felixstowe.
And what was the shortest, if you remember?
We were in Virginia for 6 months. The sad thing is I remember that was the place that I liked the most, other than England. England and Virginia. England, that really destroyed me, honestly, looking back on it now. There's some trauma. There's some real trauma there. I lived there from 3 till I was, I don't know, almost about to turn 8, I think. And that was like, as far as I was concerned, that was where I wanted to live for the rest of my life. And I had such good friends there. And that was extremely difficult. And Virginia, I just liked it. It was just beautiful. The house was beautiful that we lived in. The neighborhood was beautiful. I liked the school and everything. And it was like 6 months and we were out of there.
Did it make you, when you were making friends and stuff, did you have in your head, this is going to be so short, I have to make the most of this? Like, did it train you, I'm going to be leaving? So did you act in any way different because you knew time was short?
It took a while. But eventually, yeah, I think by the time I'd moved to Alabama when I was 10, But it, I had sort of, I think, started to get a little, just a little bit, like keeping people at arm's length a little bit. So it was the kind of the opposite of what you were just saying. Instead of trying to make friends as quickly as possible, there was a little bit of like, I don't want to make too close of friends because I'm just going to end up leaving and it's just going to hurt too much. I don't think my guard was up that much when I was in Alabama. So I made some very close friends that I'm still friends with now. But then when I left Alabama when I was 18 and moved to Miami, that was like, even then I was still able to make a couple, some very close friends in Miami. But then I moved to New York 2 years after that. And I was done at that point. I was like, I can't anymore. It's really sad.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Fascinating.
What is, well, there's no segue to this, but here we go. What's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Yes, sexiest film. I don't know. I guess I don't know that I've ever seen a film that I considered sexy. I've seen,
what?
I know. I've seen actresses that I found sexy, but the actual film itself, I can't even think of an example of a film that would make someone feel that way. Can you, what are some examples of films that you think are sexy?
I mean, I can think of a million.
Okay, let me see if any of them I've seen and agree with you. Yeah, go ahead.
Betty Blue. You ever seen that?
No, I've never even heard of that.
Okay. What about, well, I mean, a basic level, Basic Instinct, I believe is designed for you to think it's sexy.
Right.
You say in Basic Instinct, not sexy?
You know, definitely see what you mean. Definitely would be considered a sexy film. Not necessarily what I was ever into. So I don't think I thought of it. Like, it wasn't sexy to me, although I recognize that it is a sexy film. Yeah.
Grease 2.
Never saw it.
God,
never
damn
saw
it.
Yeah. Never
You're
saw
missing
it.
All the sexy films.
I guess so. Yeah.
So you've got zero. You've got no answer for this.
I've got no answer for this, man. This is mad. I know. It's really disappointing. And I really am trying to think, but I just can't come up with anything. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
So there's a subcategory that you're going to, troubling boners, worrying wide-ons, a film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should. Doesn't sound like you've ever found a film arousing.
Yeah, I don't, I guess I'm not really seeking arousal in my films. Not that people who get aroused by films are, yeah, that's not something that I'm looking for. It's not something I want. As a matter of fact, I think, yeah, I have a little bit of a puritanical upbringing, you know, super Christian parents. Maybe I think like sex in films makes me more uncomfortable than, you know, like I don't really want to see sex in films. I don't, again, it's very, I don't have a problem with it. I just don't, it's not something I'm seeking or find sexy. Most of the time I'm watching a film, I'm with other people and I'm like, this is like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just not.
So you're saying I'm a disgusting pervert. Okay.
I think that, yeah, maybe that is the implication. Is that
that's the takeaway.
Yeah, that's the takeaway.
What is objectively the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favorite, but it is the best film ever made.
I could only think of things that are films that I consider to be the greatest films of all time. Although now I realize that wasn't really the assignment. The assignment was to think of a film that I think is objectively. So I thought of two. And am I allowed to bring up two films?
You can do two and I'll pick one.
Okay.
I'll tell you which one's correct.
Okay. One is Fargo, which to me is just the perfect movie, top to bottom. It's dark, it's dramatic, it's tense, it's thrilling, it's super, super funny. The dialogue is incredible, the plotting is credible, the acting is incredible. It's just top to bottom perfect, as far as I'm concerned, Fargo. And then the other movie, just because it was so groundbreaking and so mind-blowing to so many people, including myself, was 2001: A Space Odyssey. That movie shook me. Really, really shook me the first time I saw it, and then continued to shake me at subsequent times. Anytime I ever saw a theater that was playing it, I would go see it because seeing it in a theater is just obviously that's where you want to see that movie. Yeah. You don't want to see it on a small screen. It's just when you talk about like objectively the greatest movie of all time, that's got to be up there.
Is that? That's the correct answer, I think. I love Fargo, but 2001 is the answer to that question. Correct. Well done.
Okay. All right.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school?
I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term programme. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
This is probably not a movie that I have. I mean, I have seen it multiple times. And sometimes I do this with movies where if it's a movie that I love so much that I almost don't want to watch it too many times because I love it so much. I want there to be a lot of time between the last time I watched it and the next time I watch it so I can be as excited as I possibly can be to see it again. So in that sense, I think I've held back on as many times as I probably would have watched this had I not had that up in my personality, but Tombstone.
Ah, Tombstone's great.
I just love that movie. I love it. It's so fun. It's so fun.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. It just has got some of the greatest performances. It's such an incredible ensemble cast. I'm admittedly drawn to sort of little kind of testosterone-y movies, I have to admit.
Right.
I think just because I'm a dude, I don't know, maybe I kind of like movies where like dudes are duding it out, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I just love Tombstone, man. I love it. I love it. I could watch it. I don't think I'd ever get tired of that movie.
Do you know what is interesting? Tombstone, not a lot of people, but more than three have answered Tombstone for most watched over and over again.
Like, really?
It stuck with people. Like, I love it. It's great. That it's not a massive film. I mean, it wasn't massive. You know what I mean? Like, I think it was successful, but it isn't mentioned a lot. And yet it's come up here three or four times.
Oh, you've got some people on this podcast that have very good taste in movies. But, you know, interestingly, I'm not even a fan of Westerns as a genre. I don't know that I can even think of another Western that I enjoyed on any level.
Wow.
I'm sure there must be one, but I don't know. I'm not into Westerns. And yet that movie is one of my favorite all-time movies.
Great. Now, on the other end of the scale, what's the worst film you've ever seen?
Well, the obvious answer would, I think, for most people probably be Tommy Wiseau's The Room.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that, though, because that is one of those movies that hits the sweet spot of so bad, it's so good. So in some ways, I actually consider that movie to be really, really good because it's super entertaining. Super entertaining.
Yeah.
However, there is a filmmaker. I don't know if you're familiar with this guy or if he's come up in these conversations before, but there's a filmmaker named Neil Breen.
He hasn't come up. And I haven't seen his films, but I have seen the trailers for his films and I'm aware of his existence.
You're aware of his existence. Okay, well, do yourself a favor and see if you can get through even 45 minutes of one of his movies. And I recommend starting with his first movie. It was called Double Down. And he's got a few more that he's made, like I Am Here Now and Fateful Findings.
Okay.
Buddy. There is no worse full-length feature film on the planet than everything that Neil Breen has ever made. It's extraordinary. I mean, it is extraordinary. And on some level, I guess, kind of fun, but mostly just so fucking boring that I challenge anybody to be able to sit through the entire thing. Now, we've watched almost all, if not all, of the three movies that I named with a group of friends of mine and I that love to watch terrible movies together, just because we enjoy that and like making jokes and having a laugh. That's where I've seen Neil Breen's movies. But really, really, really bad.
Is he okay?
Definitely not, because I think he thinks he's making unbelievably good movies. He clearly has a savior complex as a human being. He is always the hero of his, he acts in his own movies too. He directs them, writes them, and stars in them. And he is always the hero, and he does not, he just ain't. God bless him.
I find it heartbreaking.
Yeah.
What is, you're in comedy, you're very funny. As much as you want to do drama, you're also very funny.
Thank you.
What's the film that made you laugh the most?
There's a few for sure. But okay. I was like, okay, if I had to boil this down to what is the movie that made me laugh the hardest ever? Mm-hmm. Really, there's two of them and it's kind of a toss up, but I'm going to go with Borat.
Yes.
I think I might have broken my theater seat. I was laughing so hard. Like I was enjoying that movie so much that I think I was bouncing on this seat like a little child with ADHD, you know, a hyperactive child. It was so funny to me.
Yeah.
It absolutely killed me. It absolutely killed me. And
what was your second option?
Close second would be the South Park movie, for sure.
Fucking love the South Park movie.
It's just love another movie where I was laughing so hard I was almost falling on the ground in the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also amazing musical.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucking banging.
Yeah. Those guys are amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Love it.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month?
It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Now, Glenn Howerton, you have been an absolute delight. I'm very grateful for your time and I've really enjoyed this. However, when you were researching how can I become Spider-Man, something you've been thinking about for years, and you figured out there are radioactive spiders being tested upon in a lab, but first you had to work out how to break into that lab, and you spent 6 months Googling, working out the intricate plans. How do you get in this place? You found out the only way to really do it
was to train to become a scientist. He worked in that lab. So you did years and years researching and you became a scientist. And then you got a job at the very lab where the radioactive spiders were living. You went in.
Is this one of those weird afterlife things where you actually know? Because I didn't tell you that part.
I know.
Okay, go ahead.
You're seeing your death flash before your eyes. You handled this radioactive spider, and what was sweet about it, it didn't want to bite you. And you kept going, bite me, and it was just crawling over you. And you went, bite me, and then, mm-hmm. and you hit it. And that was your mistake, because you hit the spider, and the spider bit you out of anger. So when it bit you, it didn't bite you with love, it bit you with rage.
Oh.
And so first 3 to 4 days, great fun, sure, climbing walls, hanging up things. Then you realize, oh, I can only shit cobwebs. You're shitting webs. You're swinging around butt first. But then because of the rage, these powers get stronger and stronger. Suddenly legs shoot out of your rib cage. You got 8 eyes on your back. Your wife walks in. You're seeing 10 of her. She's like, Jesus Christ, what's going on here? You're like, it's a long story. Don't worry about it. And then you go to the neighbors. The neighbors go, they start screaming. And you go, shut up. And you eat them. You start eating your neighbors. You eat all your neighbors.
I did do that.
Your wife's like, listen, I can't live in a street without any other people in the street. You can't just eat them all. And you go, I'm sorry. I don't know. This is probably my own fault. I don't really know what's happened, but I should probably hand myself in. And she says, well, maybe take yourself back to the lab and hand yourself into scientists. And you said, no. The police are good. I should hand myself into the police. And she goes, I don't know. Okay. And you say, bye. I'll see you later. You shoot webs, shoot over to the police station and you knock on the door with all your legs and the police see you and immediately shoot you. Bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
Bullets in all your eyes. Dead. You collapse. Dead. I'm walking past with a coffin. I go, gee, what's all this noise, guys? Who are you shooting now? They said, oh, there's a giant spider turned up at the door. And we were sort of terrified. And actually, maybe we shouldn't have shot as many times as we did because we don't know him. And I go, that's not a fucking spider. That's Angry Spider-Man. I bet he's been eating all his neighbors. And they go, well, then maybe it's good we shot him. I go, well, what happened to, you know, fair justice? Like, he should have had a trial anyway.
Right.
They say, well, it doesn't matter, he's dead now. I go, well, let's put him in the coffin. So much bigger than I thought you'd be because of all your spider stuff. So the police handed me fire axes. We're chopping you up, chopping you up, chopping you up, chopping you up, chopping you up. Put bits of you, put all of you in this coffin, but there's more of you than I was expecting.
Yeah.
The coffin is absolutely jammed. There's only enough room in it for me to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show people in heaven when it's your movie night?
Well, first of all, I'm absolutely astonished at the revelation that the reason it all went bad was because I forced the spider to bite me out of anger. That was the thing. So that sucks, dude. So basically, like, if I had just figured out a way to cajole it into biting me out of love or excitement or anything other than anger,
the spider
really
needed to trust you. The spider didn't feel safe.
Yeah. Well, that's fair then. I think that's fair. That's fair. It's just, it's not great. It's not great. But if I had to, if I had to take one DVD, maybe The Big Lebowski.
Excellent.
I mean, I'm worried that too many people have said that maybe on the show, but
I don't think anyone's taken that.
No one's taken The Big Lebowski. That's crazy.
I'm sure it's come up, but I don't know if anyone took it.
That's just so fun. That's another movie I could just watch over and over again. Never get sick of it.
There you go. They're going to have a lovely time with you. Glenn, is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for in the coming months that you are in or doing or have on the go?
We're doing a couple of live Always Sunny podcast shows in Philadelphia and New York. By the time this goes out, they may have sold out by then, but maybe they haven't. And if they haven't, then you should go check it out. Go to the alwayssunnypod.com and get your live tickets to our live show. They're a lot of fun. And then just the podcast. Other than that, you know, we're on strike. So we can't do anything.
Mm.
Nothing we can do, you know? So we just got to talk to each other about all the wonderful movies we wish we'd been in and hope that one of these days we can be in another one.
Well, I don't know when it comes out. Or anyway, if you haven't seen Blackberry, you should see Blackberry. I'm telling the audience. Really good.
Of course, that's what I should be promoting more than anything. Blackberry is available on video on demand now. You can rent it. I'm very, very proud of that movie. So thank you for shouting that out.
It's really good. You know what else? It does a really smart, with no spoilers, there's a kind of simple thing that it sets up for a complicated business. You know, it distills an idea into a very simple thing that is really like, it's such good storytelling. It's just such good storytelling in the way that that pays off this small thing. Brilliant.
Truly. Yeah. Great no, movie. It was... Even in script form, it was absolutely incredible. I'm so grateful yeah. that I was able to do that movie. And it was such a pleasure talking to you, man. I really enjoy your work.
Oh, man, I loved it. Thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm a big fan of yours.
Yeah, it's really cool seeing you in person, like talking to the real you. You're such a lovely guy. Not bristly
Shut
at
up.
All.
Shut up. It was lovely to see you. Have a lovely day.
All right.
Good day to you. So that was episode 268. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 25 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Glenn. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra secrets and video with Glenn. Go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a very nice thing to read. My neighbour Maureen loves it. She always cries. Yeah, and she'll really appreciate it. We both really appreciate it. Thank you so much to Glenn for doing the show and for being so great, giving me his time. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lytham for the photography. So that is it for now. I hope you are all very well. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.